the CU 2.0 podcast.
We serve well over 2.5 million members today, and the technology is owned. We sit on $10 to $15 million of cash every day, and we have never had a research project where we didn't have the available cash to invest in technology and move forward with technology on any format from that standpoint. But we are a second to market, third, fourth to market firm. We believe in a high percentage of natively owned software. So we have a manufacturer's edge, not a buy edge. Our integrations are deep, and they get deeper every single day. And then we're supplemented as a firm with a lot of service. Now, we believe in three things: price disruption, access disruption, and shared execution. So where I would contend why credit unions can live for a very, very long time is they own everything that we provide. They set the price. They set the return expectation.
Randy Carnes, you just heard from him, may be the poster boy for the cooperative entrepreneur. In the process, he may also come upon the formula that will enable many hundreds, perhaps thousands of small credit unions thrive in the 21st century. How can they? Aren't they doomed? Aren't they technology deserts in an era of digital banking? Nope. Not with CU Answers. That's the CUSO, Carnes Helms. He's at their side. He has their back. CU Answers once was simply a core system provider. But as the technology needs of credit unions have evolved, so has CU Answers. It now offers online banking, mobile banking, you name it. Whatever you want, CU Answers will probably be there if you're a small credit union. 178 credit unions own CU Answers. They range in size from microscopic to over $1 billion in assets. Typical CU Answers credit union is 80 to 100 million in assets, and sure, many pundits say that's an endangered species. Carnes dissents. I don't think they will be gone, he says. Yeah, its credit unions will survive to the extent they stay creative and disrupt. Remember that. The point of a credit union is not to be staid, it's not to be conservative. It's to rock the boat. That's why credit unions were founded. That's how they got started. They were different. They weren't banks. They weren't conservative bankers. They weren't the people who foreclosed on poor widows' mortgages into depression. Nope, that's not what a credit union is about. Ones that prosper today will remember that. They will be inventive, creative, innovative, and, says Carnes, they will do very well indeed. This is your host, Robert McGarvey. This is the CU 2.0 podcast. Buckle up. It's a good ride with Randy Carnes.
You are a lot more than core system, right? Why don't you tell me what you are?
Well, I mean, I think that first we're an operational network and a unique one in that because we're 100% owned by credit unions. And beyond that, we're organized as a, how do I say this, legal or very defined cooperative. And in our industry, cooperatives like ours are rare, especially when you think about that we must pay a minimum dividend on ownership shares of 4% and a maximum of 8%. And there's a lot of those things that actually drive us to be an operational network. Now, being owned by credit unions, then you have a situation where they drive you to do more than just the tool. They want to hear how to use the tool. They want to create businesses for shared execution of tools. So you would imagine if you had a 135 owners, and then you treated everyone as if they were an owner, and you had now a network of almost 300 core credit unions, they push you into a lot of different things.
Now, one reason I got in touch with you is I was talking with Jim Blaine a month or so ago and said, well, all small credit unions are going to die because they can't keep up technologically. Mm-hmm. And Blaine said, you got to talk to Randy Carnes because he has ways that can keep small credit unions alive technologically. Not naive. He knows they face other challenges besides naive technology. But he said that I was wrong, that they couldn't keep pace technologically. That you have answers to steal the name of your company.
I think, first of all, I think your premise is a little too simple. I think when you define credit unions, you have to actually say, How do you think, what does a credit union look like in the future? And why do you look at credit unions with such a holistic opinion? Like, we know the market is changing, but a credit union is effectively just consumers who say, I can do it better. I can create options for myself and I can create options for my peers. We're working as many as 11 to 12 de novo projects right now that we do pro bono for 2.5 years and deeply, deeply discounted for 5 years, if not more. And so if you say to me, all credit unions are going to die based upon maybe the profile that the trades look at credit unions must be this, or the NCUA looks at credit unions and they must be this, I would say then potentially there will be cooperative consumer-owned financial service firms far, 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 far into the future. Now, what happens there is people define their relevance at a certain size. And as we see now, I mean, the relevance of credit unions soon, someday is going to say that a credit union of anything less than $10 billion is not relevant. Those people who define other people's relevance have an arrogance about them based on centralized planning and those kind of things. But let's come back. I mean, the average credit union at CU Answers is probably between $80 and $100 million, but we stretch from de novos to billion-dollar organizations. We serve well over 2.5 million members today, and the technology is owned. We sit on $10 to $15 million of cash every day, and we have never had a research project where we didn't have the available cash to invest in technology and move forward with technology on any format from that standpoint. But we are a second to market, third, fourth to market firm. We believe in a high percentage of natively owned software. So we have a manufacturer's edge, not a buy edge. Our integrations are deep and they get deeper every single day. And then we're supplemented as a firm with a lot of service. Now we believe in three things, price disruption, access disruption, and shared execution. So where I would contend why credit unions can live for a very, very long time is they own everything that we provide. They set the price, they set the return expectation, and they match the actual market need to the right horizon as to our ability to deliver services. We're very focused on long-term core competencies, and we don't extend very far beyond the evolving core competency of credit unions. So we're not guessing about things. We're saying, okay, we see these core competencies within the next 3 years as needed, and it's easy to invest in that. If you think about it, these small credit unions that people refer to control, if you just take our annual gross revenues of our network and you look at that, so they're controlling about $80 million of cash flow in a five-year plan or a three-year plan and $400 million of cash flow. Now, they have that money and they're focused in the right way to sustain their organizations. I don't think small credit unions are going to be gone. I think they're going to build what they need and continue on. To my point, CU Answers is 50 years old next February.
Wow.
It is a CUSO that's never been recapitalized. So think about in an era of venture capitalists who pour in rounds and rounds and rounds of venture money, and we see it in the credit business and the CUSO business also. CU Answers has never had to do that. In 25 years, we've built in the black. We stay within ourselves, we know ourselves, and we know our community. That's what credit unions do. And therefore, I won't bet against them. Now, credit unions can survive based on their will. Now, that doesn't mean their agents always have the will, because today we have a lot more doubt in the professional agency of credit unions, right? CEOs, regulators, vendors, they may say that they doubt the relevance of credit union professional careers, but I wouldn't doubt the relevance of a credit union to its community. I just got home from trade organizations meeting down in the Bahamas. There's still a relevant need for cooperative financial services, and someone will always fill it.
When I look at the map of where your members are, it's this fairly focused map. How many states? members in?
Almost every state, Hawaii, Alaska, Florida, Maine, et cetera, et cetera. But you have to realize that CU Answers is a network business. So we have one of the things that we really believe in is a cooperative model and regional ownership intensity. So we've started a relationship with CU Northwest in Japan and CU South in Alabama, Mississippi area, and they have owners and they have their own CUSO, but we are a network business. So they're group providers. So we're almost in every state. Our intensity based on the age of our firm is definitely Midwest. You go from the Midwest, we consider our tiers of marketing focus, anything that touches a Great Lake and then anything that touches that state. But we recently started our Hawaii and Western region and we'll be opening a new first ever serious office in Las Vegas later in 2020 and change what people expect from us and change our options as we look forward with a dual regional focus. Now, in this day and age of the internet, thinking about you can do business, I can be doing business with you right now from my home office, and you can do business anywhere as a data center. But as an operational center, people want to know that we're vested in their community and that we have a regional focus and a regional commitment. And so as we go to one center west of the Rockies and one center in the Mid-East or the East, I think people are going to see a different flavor of CU Answers. And that is not the point. The point is we work on the agenda of credit unions and we're part of their community. So a new vision for our credit unions and what our credit unions are asking us to do to succeed immediately on the horizon. I'm excited about the next 50 years now. For our firm, you know, obviously I'm 60 years old, so I'm not planning to be here to 110, but I think we have a real opportunity to be a firm that'll be around here in 110 years.
You've been at CU Answers almost half your life, right? 25 years.
Yeah, I have.
What's kept you there?
Probably the same commitment to community that credit union leaders put in. I was at Fiserv. I was a senior vice president at Fiserv, and I missed that cooperative design. I missed what it held out. And that's when I met CU Answers. It was then called Wesco. And they were down to about 29 employees in a very small network and on many levels bankrupt. But the people that were still there had that community focus and faith. They were ready to ride it up. What I was worried about at Fiserv was that it wasn't a community where I would invest half my life. But Fiserv introduced me to the idea of a data center and a team and a 30-year horizon. I was very intrigued by Bob Dorgan, who had a 30-year career with a data center through many companies and ended up at Fiserv with the same company because it was sold over and over and over. I wanted that 30-year commitment to a community, and the owners of CU Answers vested with me and I vested with them, and it was an easy and fast 25 years.
I assume your coworkers at Fiserv thought you were clinically insane.
Many did. I think, things and circumstances at the time, they funnel people through things. And sometimes you think that's all well orchestrated. And I'd like to say I picked everything ahead of time, but circumstances took me here. And my passion for here grew almost from the day, first day. Many did. But I thought they were insane for staying. And I like the people of Fiserv, and I think many of their models were right on track, and their success proves that. I just think how that fits with the cooperatives. You have to remember that CU Answers has a mere governance model. So we have no private money in our queue, so there's no owners. And we have one owner, one vote. We have 7 volunteer board of directors. My compensation and my relationship with the cooperative is the exact same as a relationship a CEO at a credit union have with its organization. And we do everything possible to show that the principle of cooperatives do business with cooperatives is a valid one. And I look at the cooperative and credit union model as a business design. As a matter of fact, when the speech I just gave in the Bahamas was based upon, if you think of cooperation and collaboration as a social mechanism, and this day and age, you probably are not going to be as happy with what you harness as if you at least blend that of saying today, cooperation, collaboration in a cooperative is a business framework that can be very, very successful. And so I wish credit unions owned more businesses. I wish credit unions and the NCUA saw the power. As a matter of fact, when I am the most frustrated with credit unions, it's when the dogma of being a credit union blinds them to the power of being a cooperative entrepreneur and actually using that whole idea to say that credit unions should expand well beyond just financial services if they're going to change their communities and vest people. I think they do need to do much more work to inspire the awareness that consumers own the business, can pick other things to do with the business they own and leverage it in a lot of different ways, much like CU Answers has been leveraged beyond being just a core processor to an operational partner vested with any need that our community might have.
So at this point, you provide mobile banking services and online banking services, right?
Yep, mobile, online. There's not a credit union technology approach that we don't provide, right? And so we have kind of our self-reliance was based upon the fact that we can't disrupt price without being a manufacturer. We can't guarantee a disruptive access. You know, we want to disrupt access. We want creators to have access to everything without a manufacturer's point of view. And we can't do shared execution very well if we can't vest with the credit unions as to workflow and process and those things. Now, we have lots of integrations. But along the way, you know, a third-party vendor can come to you and say, don't invest in online banking. You can take a partner's margin in our online banking and have the same profit margin. But online banking in the 90s was clearly going to be the teller line of the future. And if a core processor didn't write their own teller software, then that ability to have a manufacturer's perspective and a manufacturer's advantage was going to end. And mobile is there today. And as we look at things and how things change in technology, you have to stay in that core competency area and you have to build that to maintain a future. And so if something new comes along, then I anticipate that the next generations of leaders at CU Answers will see that as a area they must flow towards. So we'll see how that goes in the future.
Yeah, one of my theories about keeping many, many, many small credit unions alive, and you certainly have much more insight into this than I do, is to say, hey guys, you're not in the technology business. Don't pretend you are. You're good at community relations. That's what you excel at. And the more you excel at that, the better you're going to do. Give the technology to someone else to do. Partner up with other credit unions. You don't need to sleep with your core system. Share a core system if you can. And that's kind of what you're doing.
Well, it's certainly where we started. The credit unions that started us, there was a large credit union who had a core processing system and relationship. And then they started to share that with others and to the point where they took over ownership. And I do agree with that. I think the premise, though, is that, remember, credit unions will survive based on their ability to be creative and disruptive. I really am into this disruptive concept and what disruption means. And it's almost never technology. Technology can be disruptive. It's what people do with tools to be disruptive. And as long as credit unions have unique and creative people, I don't really judge credit unions by their asset size or the number of members. I judge them by their willingness to be creative and challenge every premise for their community. Technology is something that you should really, you should prove you have a business before you overinvest in technology. And so I do like small cranes who come out and go say, well, we're going low tech and we're starting a business. Remember, a crane was started by someone who just said, I could do that. And if cranes had more of that creative spirit of I could do that, and they applied that to more areas of business in their communities, I think they're fine. So I don't know any small credit unions. I just know small thinkers and I know big thinkers. And very seldom do those two things, are they restrained by the asset size of a credit union. I know small thinkers at the NCUA who think of themselves as very, very big thinkers with very, very big jobs. And sometimes small and big thinkers don't always get the right jobs if it comes to success in an industry.
Well, NCUA, kind of definitionally is risk averse, and the people who work for NCUA must be risk averse.
Well, risk averse doesn't bother me. What bothers me at the NCUA is that they're in a job to take away the differentials of credit unions and apply that to a common denominator. That's why everybody who talks about the industry has a tendency to cast opinions about what is relevant or not relevant. And so if we can't define the credit union industry as with a differential, and we must compare it to something else, all the other something else, be it banks or be it other kinds of social networks or businesses. And the very definition is it's like this instead of it is this. Then those are small thinkers who put everything into the same box, and pretty soon they put themselves into the same box, and there won't even need to be an NCUA regulatory division because it'll just be the same denominator for everyone.
Credit union survival requires a different kind of thinking. So many credit union executives I've talked to, I just want to beat their head against the wall or my head against the wall, because it's as though all they want to do is compete with the bank down the street. Huh? That's not how credit unions started. Credit unions started meeting unmet needs. Yeah. They saw an unmet need and eight guys threw a dollar in a bucket and said, well, we're going to start a credit union. But that was cool. And that's why so many flourished, because it was an unmet need that people came along. I said, it's either us or the loan shark. Which do you think is better for our friends and neighbors? Well, it's clearly us.
And I think when you talk to Jim, you're talking to a person who saw this, there was only a need for one thing. Be stubborn about improving your community. Be true to the value that you actually provide your community. And don't be afraid to be different. And although he became very, very large, and people can put him into a template for large credit unions, his unique spirit and unique creative designs over the years, along with his persistence and timeless ideas about credit unions, defined his career unlike anyone else's. And I think people should take away from that.
Pretty much. The only career I think is somewhat like that is Gary Oakland at BECU, who also grew an immense credit union in a mid-sized state. That's what's interesting about both of them. They're mid-sized states. Now, in a typical last year or the year before, how many members did you lose?
There's many ways to lose, right? Someone merges out or
I would imagine most of the time when you lose someone, they merge out. But I'm just guessing there.
Yeah, for about 15 years, we didn't have a credit union deconvert, but we had obviously credit unions that merged out, and then we have credit unions who merged in. So we've been lucky to be a positive gain as to members and even financial organizations. It's hard. I don't have that number off the top of my head. It's painful, but it's not a relative number to our overall performance at this point. So if it was, I probably would know the number. But we've won as many as we've lost. And we have some very good programs to actually buy market share and invest in market share. So we do things like if you're merging and someone comes from the outside, then we waive the fees for your merger partner for 1 year to help you absorb that. And we will actually waive them longer. If someone merges with another credit union in our organization, we waive all of the merger fees and all of the barriers to contract cancellation. And so we have an aggressive scholarship program for credit unions that are struggling. And we have an aggressive reinvestment program with credit unions. Like if you're struggling, you can actually win a scholarship from CU Answers for our services to be free for 2.5 years. And then at a reflection point at 2.5 years, then if you merge with one of our credit unions, it's free. If you don't, if you're successful, you just sign a normal contract with us and move on. So there's many, many things that we have to do, those kind of things. When you have a cooperative and you have a community, the first point of that community is it invests in its peers. And you don't think about it like a profit vendor. You're saying, if you have dreams and you'll say yes to life and you're creative, we'll invest in those dreams. We'll believe in those dreams. And then we'll do more than just give you money. We'll participate. Patronage is investment. And when people don't have collateral, don't have cash, don't have those things, just like a credit union, your patronage gives you status in this community. And then we're going to pass that forward. Your patronage is going to be passed forward. And it's so necessary. I think you can build a business with dedicated patronage almost more than you can with capital. Capital is an investment, and it has almost, you know, it's a fancy word for a loan. They expect to be paid back. It's a return. Patronage is belief. It's persistence. It's cash flow. It's all the things necessary to sustain an organization and say, I believe in you and you'll get better. Now, for a tech firm, I'll tell you what, you need people who believe in you and who are users and want to build a product. In this day and age where it's so simple to say, well, in this age of all vendors and all solutions and everything, of course, nothing needs to be built. We just need to reorganize and buy and configure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you got to have a builder's soul in a co-op.
Compete for employees?
Well, you get creative and you understand how to make them feel self-employed, and you drive a business development mindset into your core leaders that if they grow the business, they participate in those revenues. When I first came here, CU Answers was, it had a set. And when you interviewed the owners of it and they were trying to figure out what to do, many of them said, protect my lifestyle. Protect the gig I have. And it was very clear coming from Pfizer. If you could have credit unions who maybe, you know, didn't have Saturday hours, closed at 4:30, et cetera, et cetera. And then, I'm not saying they didn't work hard. I'm just saying they had a lifestyle, a gig. And then coming from Pfizer, I said, well, you know, the vision in the future is that shared gig, the wrapper around your gig, is going to have to be a little bit more. Now, you can joke and you can say they had beer budgets and champagne taste to extend some of those business models. And so what you do in a co-op is you share the growth around the credit unit. And then you find a list of employees and people who actually understand that and say, wow, that's a real opportunity. In some situations, we actually compensate our employees 40% of the gross on business extensions. And so that's another reason we got into operational services, because those were highly value compensation, right? You said, if you can grow this, if you can think this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so that mindset of building around cooperatives and building in between communities can be a lucrative opportunity for people who see the value in that. And lucrative, not off the scale. I'm not competing with any probably leader at Pfizer these days, but I've had a wonderful life that was facilitated by sharing in the opportunities of communities. And that's motivational. Employees like that, and they see the opportunity.
I would guess that many of your employees also buy into the cooperative model. Am I right?
Very much. And it fits for us. And we have longstanding employees, but we have a very direct and performance culture. And we thrive on finding those people. Now, for a performance culture, then you also, in a tech world, you're going to negotiate things like environment. You're going to negotiate responsibility. And, you know, I believe that employees are always motivated on three things, a blended three things that change throughout their life. The employees are going to prioritize responsibility, compensation, and environment. My board has been very, very creative and allowed us creative environments, wonderful responsibility, and career wages. So when you have that vision from your board and you have that drive in your leaders, then you can be happy for a very, very long time. And that's what we see with our employees.
Yeah, because you're in a technology business, you're in an intensely competitive business, intensely competitive for good employee talent. But it reminds me a bit, oddly enough, of what's happening to natural food grocery co-ops, which 20 years ago were gentle little hippie businesses that sold soy milk and brown rice, and where else could you buy it? Now you can buy it at the corner store. Their business has become horribly competitive. Not horribly in a bad way. It's inspired some ingenuity on their part. A lot of those businesses have closed in the recent years because they can't compete. But the ones that do are really doing a good job of competing. They can beat Whole Foods. But they're in the same war for talent. How do you get talent? Particularly when you're not paying as much as the big national grocers. Or in your case, you're not paying as much as Pfizer, I don't think.
Well, it would depend on where am I paying not as much Pfizer. And you remember, I mean, when you're at a second or third or fourth to labor, to market kind of effect, you're waiting for distribution to come to you. You're not saying that I'm trying to solve first mover problems. I'm not breaking ice for 10 years from now. I'm not breaking ice for 20 years from now. I'm finding models that actually are in market, they are distributed, and the actual community has an expertise and simply understanding how to make it fit for them, all right? I'm not trying to build products that fit for faceless generations. I'm trying to build products that fit for people who have today's agenda, and they say, these are the things I need to move the ball forward. So at some levels, we're very low to the ground. I mean, I still work with employees on specs. I still work with people on customer service issues, education, documentation, all of those kind of thing. I think you have to look at where production comes from and how far away it is from the dreams of the future versus right now. And that doesn't mean that we don't track those things and we don't look at those things. But, you know, I sat last week and there were shared ledgers and cryptocurrency and all of those kind of things. And I can see the promise in them, right? But I don't see the investment being telling right now or pressing. And so I've never seen anything in technology that you thought might be elusive that didn't turn out to be someone was knocking on your door saying, I can tell you how to do this, or I can sell it to you, or I can do it. The key for technology is understanding distribution channels and how they're morphed. The idea that you can go direct to the source of someone when in the past you believed if you didn't go through its distributor, you'd never get it. So as we get closer and closer to the sources of things, small technology firms can actually achieve margins and prices that someone said, well, if you're not there first, you'll never have a chance. Well, as someone who says never, when someone says never to me, I'll never sell this to you. You're too small of organizations, or you're too this, or you're too this. 6 weeks later, they're back saying, you know what? We still need marginal growth. So patience and perspective of how to get there and what you're doing. Small firms like us have a great advantage because we don't have to pay for the hype to get investors, you know. And if you think about technology generally, we have a tendency to hype, and that has an expense, and you're trying to attract capital. Well, patronage is capital to me, as I already said. If you don't have the cost of hype, then you don't have the cost of paying off on that hype, and you don't have that investor cost. So you're dealing much more with what is known, and you have less air to overcome, and it can be effective.
So you don't have to persuade a credit union that it wants mobile remote deposit capture. They already want it. The only question is, how do we work this out?
Right. And since we're a manufacturer, we went, you know, we said, well, let's have a firm. Let's partner with this firm. And we bought into an imaging firm and check processing firm. And because we actually were part of the same network, I said, well, let's start posting RDC deposits instantly. And a normal distributor would say, Randy, I can't. There's not enough core providers that want to post instantly. Well, we went real time.
Wow.
And then instead of posting in batch, and we could actually make members see that the promise of RDC deposit, it's real. It's not wait, you know, we post them once a week or once a day or every other day or those kind of things. And when we did that, we went real time and we post for a fee of $25 a week. So if you're a $1 billion credit union, your cost to post remote deposit is $25 a week. And so we can get very, very disruptive. The other side of that, if you're a super small provider, we can actually see the investment of allowing you to have almost zero cost until it's a relevant business to you. So much of financial service businesses saying, I have that, whether you want it or not, I have it. Well, we don't make people pay big risk fees to say they have something. We want the fees they pay for things to be relatively low advertising costs for their persona, not a tech investment cost. So you have to look at these things different. How do you get disruptive, or how do you get access? And then finally, shared execution. I mean, that, you know, you finally, how do you share employees, share resources, share some concept of what it really means to execute. I mean, people have tools, they just can't execute game plan. Find the people who can. Trust them like they're your own. Cooperatives need to influence things, not own things. They have a different point of view.
Before we go, the CU 2.0 podcast is looking for a few good sponsors. to help us spread the word about the digital transformation of credit unions, you could be one of them. Contact Robert McGarvey for details at rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. First come, first served. Again, that's rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. The CU 2.0 podcast.